Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Daynor Gerald.
And I'm Lonzo Liggins. What is it like to grow up with parents from two different racial or ethnic backgrounds? How does that shape your view of the world? How does it shape your view of love and identity, especially here in Utah?
According to census.gov, the multiracial population is the fastest growing demographic in the United States, increasing by 276% between 2010 and 2020. And in Utah alone, the multiracial population increased by 269% in that same period. Now, unless y'all have been under a rock this past year, I'm sure you've heard about the well-publicized rap battle between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. Drake was attacked for being half black and half Jewish. This brought to light a lot of dirty laundry, particularly in the black community, about racial identity when one of your parents is not black. So, joining us today to help us unpack all of this, we have Chantel Squires and eBay Hamilton.
Yes, we do. How's it going, guys?
Going great.
Chantel, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Chantel Squires. I was born and raised in Lehi, Utah. And my mother is Peruvian. She was born in Lima, Peru, and lived there up until she was 18. And my dad is from Utah, Centerville, Utah. And so, and I'm a film director here. I love Utah. I love living here and having the background that I have.
Wonderful. eBay.
Yeah.
First of all, tell us about your name.
Okay. Yes. Well, so my name is eBay Jamil Hamilton, Director of Programming and Operations for KRCL Radio here in Salt Lake. eBay is my birth given name. Mm-hmm. Lots of folks always wonder if it's a nickname or if I was named after the website. No.
I have a feeling you've been around longer than the website.
I've been around longer than home computers. I've been around longer than the internet. Much longer than the website. Actually, my name comes from, do you remember the 70s sitcom Good Times, the TV show?
Of course.
There was an episode in 1976 with a two-part episode with a cameo character who was a Nigerian exchange student whose name was eBay. And the spelling on the show, at least, was I-B-E, but my mother just sounded it out, E-B-A-Y. Mm-hmm. And the website didn't come around until I was 20 or so. 18 or 20 is the first time I think I heard about it. And by that point, not changing my name.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Another thing is, eBay and I went to high school together.
Yeah,
so he was, wow. So back then we were even kind of laughing at his name and being like, eBay, what is that? Where does that name come from? But tell us a little bit about your background as well.
So I was born in Long Beach, California. My mother's from Orem, Utah, and my father is from Indianapolis, Indiana. Mm-hmm. The two met here in Utah while my mother was attending the U. They dated for quite a while, moved to California together. And when I was two, they split up and my mom moved home to Utah. So I've been here since I was two. I consider myself a full-on Utahn. Mm-hmm. And my father eventually moved back as well. His family was here, and my mother's family is here. So I grew up with the black side of my family, which is my father's side, and the white side, which is my mom.
Okay. All right. So tell us a little bit, Chantel, about living in this area. You had some unique experiences. How about, like, you know, obviously there's a lot of LDS people probably that you grew up around. Did that
Footloose
have any impact?
Footloose was filmed there as well.
Yes, Footloose was filmed right there down the street from you. How did being from two different races affect your experience in that regard?
Yeah, growing up in Lehi, Utah, I mean, it was very, very white. I when I was little, I was in the sun all day. So I was a lot darker than I am right now. And I didn't ever see anyone that looked like me. And it was a weird experience because my mom, I'm even darker than my mother. So wow. And she was very self-conscious about being dark. And so I just always felt like I was different. And I, not being able to see myself in anyone around me, it was a weird experience. I've had to unpack it for many years because it's a experience of not knowing where I belonged. You know, it was like, who am I? I'm not like anybody else, but what does that mean for me? And
that's hard to figure out when you're that young also.
Yeah, and also figuring out, like, you know, people would say things about people with dark skin and, you know, what are you supposed to make of that? So I actually hated my skin all the way up through even high school. I just felt like I didn't, like, in terms of being around people, I just didn't even feel like I was one of them. I never felt like, you know, anyone would see me as someone that that they'd want to date or that they would like, or I just felt very different. And I wouldn't say like, oh yeah, it sucked. And I mean, I had a beautiful life. I had a lot of privilege, you know, like, and I knew that. That was one thing. Like, my mom grew up in a one room, like, hut in Peru with dirt floors. There were 7 kids. And so, like, I always knew that she overcame. She had nothing growing up. And so we had everything, right? We had a home. I had a great education. We went to a private school, and my mom drove us every day, like, you get your education because that is why I'm here. And, you know, very much like this immigrant mentality. So I had a great appreciation mm-hmm. for my life. And you know, my parents loved me very much, and I had both of their love. But then, like, going and just being so different, it was just hard to kind of, like, wrap my mind around that. I don't know. I had a lot of identity issues, I would say, like loving
tough.
Myself.
Yeah, sure. That's really tough when you're young.
Yeah, I know. And eBay, you kind of had a similar experience with, like, because you were LDS and there was some Pentecostal stuff going on. So let's hear it.
Yeah, so neither of my parents are religious,
okay.
But their families are very. So my mother's side, very active LDS to uh-huh. this day. And my father's side, Pentecostal. In fact, that's why they moved to Utah, was following a church out here, a Pentecostal church. And as a kid, I grew up, I would go with my aunts to the Pentecostal church, you know, not every Sunday, but on occasion. And I would go with my grandmother or other folks in my neighborhood to the LDS church. And the two spaces couldn't be more different, you know.
Describe.
Going to an LDS church where it's very, you know, they don't clap. There's not a lot of excitement.
No.
And then you go to a Pentecostal church, and this was full on. They're holy rollers. So they shout. The choir is wonderful and huge and beautiful and loud. People dance up and down the aisles.
Jamming.
Speaking in tongues. Yeah, all of it. So seeing these two different worlds at a very young age and being aware that most people I was around weren't having those same experiences, you know. Even in my family, they weren't going to the different churches and seeing those different spaces. So, pretty early on, I definitely felt like I was bouncing around from different worlds, you know. And I loved being in both of those spaces. For when I was really young, when I was 8, I was baptized LDS. I left the church when I was 13, and then I was baptized Pentecostal when I was 18. Left when I was like 20, 21 or so. So I was very active myself for brief periods.
You've been in both pools.
I've been, playing it safe.
That's the beauty of it, though, you know. Because here's the thing, I'm biracial. So, I mean, I really get this whole thing. And I'm really curious as to how you two view the world, specifically other people growing up. Like, when I see people, well, I don't want to talk about my experience because I'm curious about how you viewed other people and how you viewed other races when you were growing up. I want to start with you, Chantel.
Yeah, I guess just even thinking like what you're talking about with like religion and stuff, it was interesting because my parents were so different culturally that the one thing that they both agreed on was their love for Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And so I really clung to that. And I ended up having just like my own very personal relationship with Jesus that was where I found love, mm-hmm. right? And just like, I felt loved and I knew who I was and it made me, it gave me something that was both of my parents. Yeah, it was like, oh, okay, we're all God's children. And I always looked at it that way. So I think that's how I felt seen, and that's how I felt like I was someone. Like, I really clung to that in my life more than I probably would have another way. And so looking around at people who were different races, like growing up in Lehigh, I didn't actually see a lot of
like
people.
Like, I was one race, so it all looked the same to me.
And when I would see somebody that looked more like me, like, it was, it was really, it's really peaceful, actually. Like, when I've recently, like the last 3 years, I went to Mexico for the first time, and there's just like people from all over the world were in this like area that I was in. And I just sat there, I was like, this is the craziest experience I've ever had, because I just felt like I looked like people. And it was just really calming. So I don't know, I guess I've seen people, you know, of different races. A lot of my best friends are, you know, they're mixed race or different races. I feel connected to them because our experience in life is similar enough that we can bond in different, you know, different aspects of it. But I think growing up, I didn't quite know, you know, I was called names, and I knew it wasn't okay to have dark skin. Right? Like, wow. That's not true. But like, as a kid, it was just like, there's something wrong with that. And so I felt compassion for people with dark skin, because I felt like we were all struggling with something, you know? So, but I don't know that I thought a whole lot about it.
Well, I'm curious about one thing before we go on to eBay. You have these two parents that you look at. You have one that's dark skinned, one that's white. You had to have viewed that in a certain way, or did you just see it as, these are just my parents and this is just life and there's nothing wrong with it? Like, what was your view of that?
Well, my dad was just, he was so loving, and he would just tell us we were so beautiful, right? So that was one thing, where he was also worked outside. He's a brick mason. He was very tan. And that made it, it's just like, oh, your skin gets tanner if you work outside and you're a hard worker. So like, I don't know, there was something about that, but my dad loved our dark hair, and he would just like, he would always tell us how beautiful we were. So I think, you know, I felt very loved in that sense. And also just like, my mom didn't like her dark skin. So it was this complicated thing. But when I'd see, like, I had, all my cousins were white. And I don't know, I did just feel like I didn't belong anywhere. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It was just this weird, like, it was almost like I didn't really exist, you know, around people. It was like, you know, people would be looking and they'd just skip over me. That's like the feeling that I had about being anywhere. It was like, I had to like kind of level up in other ways, like be smarter than other people or work harder or be more talented, you know, like to really feel like I was, people could look at me and like see me. I just felt like I was glossed over, which is, I don't know why that happens, right?
Let's hear your perspective on that.
Well, I didn't really think about it much as a kid. I grew up with my white mother and my white brother. And while my dad was in my life, I was in a white family. And I just didn't think about it much until grade school, and other people started asking me why I looked the way I did when my mom looked the way she did. Folks started asking if I was adopted, you know, and just thinking like, why would you, you know, why do you think that? And then realizing over time that, oh, the world sees me very differently than I see myself, and my family sees me, and my friends see me. And like Chantel, I think, there were comments about, oh, you've got really nice hair. There's, you know, I would get comments about my complexion, but things that maybe people thought were complimentary, but definitely made you feel like you were different, you know, even if they were nice, whatever, things to hear or to say, or the intention was good. Still, it was, you're different than everybody else here.
Yeah.
And my father, when I was younger, used to always say, you have the best of both worlds. And I always thought that was just an interesting idea and concept, because I didn't feel that way. I felt like if somebody didn't like black people, they didn't like me. And in the black community, where white folks didn't always know what I was, but they mostly thought I was black, and quite often are surprised when they find out that I have any white in me, let alone that I'm half white.
Wow.
But the black community, there's never been a black person I've met who didn't know right away that I was biracial.
Right.
So people always knew that I was different in those spaces, and if they didn't like the other group mm-hmm. or had some sort of animosity towards it, I felt it as well. Right. So I didn't always feel like I had the best of both worlds. I understood what my father's view on it was. He thought I would be it'd be easier for me to be accepted into different spaces where maybe he didn't feel like he could be. And I'm sure that there is truth to that, but there's still the opposite side of that, you know. And like Chantel, I think you'd be in a space, and you knew you stood out yeah. in that room, yeah. you know. And over time, I think you don't even think about it, you know. It's just, it becomes one of those things that you're so used to being in those spaces. And I was lucky that I had the black side of my family and the white side, so yeah. I could be in those spaces and feel accepted in those yeah. spaces. It allowed me when I got a little older and into high school. Lonzo and I went to the same high school, and we were there wasn't a lot of diversity, but there was some.
There was a little.
Yeah, there was some.
You too?
There was a handful of us that were there. But here was the surprise. The thing about it is that most of the kids in our high school were biracial.
Yeah.
You know?
I was going to say the same.
There's a very high population.
Most of the people we knew were all mixed kids, all biracial kids.
Right.
Yeah, my best friend who grew up across the street from me, biracial kid. Most of the girls I dated in high school, biracial.
Right.
You know, that was, so it felt like we had our own little... Our own little bubble as well.
Okay, wait a minute. Now, I feel like I'm like the odd man out here, but I will say I can relate to some of this because that feeling that you had, I had that same sort of experience like when you went to Mexico, when I went to Africa, right? Because I was thinking I'm going to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kinshasa. There was all this hype about it being one of the most dangerous cities in the world, et cetera. And I thought, man, they're gonna see me. I'm gonna stick out like a sore thumb. I'm gonna be like a target on my back. Oh, get that dumb American. He's gonna give us some money or whatever. And when I got there, after my nerves settled, it didn't take long. I realized nobody was giving me a second glance. I fit in, like you said, you fit in Mexico. People looked at me and they were just like going, oh, he's from this tribe. Oh, he's from that tribe. And I was like, wow, it is so nice to be around people who look exactly like me, even though they speak four or five languages and I only speak one or two. Mm-hmm. And it's like there's something about the connection that you have when somebody looks like you. And it's a powerful sort of feeling, you know what I mean? Like you don't have to say much to know that you understand each other because of that shared experience.
Well, and you also have biracial kids. You know?
That's true. That's true.
And one of the things here, like in Utah, is you'll see a lot of interracial relationships, in particular, especially between, you know, black and white. And a lot of people have these really, you know, intense feelings about it. And I know you've heard it. I know eBay's definitely heard it growing up. And a lot of it has to do not based on the fact that it's what somebody prefers. It's just the fact that it's the availability. You know, when you have, you know, 100 to 1, you know, I challenge anyone to go into a grocery store and see how many black women or black men that they see and or anywhere, really. So, I mean, it becomes about what's available in the dating pool, you know, at many times. But it's not just something that it's like, oh, this is just what they prefer here. Mm-hmm. But you do see a lot of biracial people. And I wanted to ask you guys something, because when I grew up biracial, I never viewed what was happening with my parents as wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, people around me had kind of said, oh, you know, they're not supposed to do that. You know, blacks aren't supposed to be with whites. So I'd hear these things. But in my brain, I never saw, like, what they were doing was evil or bad. Did you both feel that same way?
I definitely felt like, my parents were separated. And so there was always a sense of, you know, something didn't work, you know. But I didn't think it was race-related at all. Mm-hmm. And my time with in the LDS church, I learned about the Lamanites and this idea that there are people that have been cursed with darker skin, and there were questions that came up for me that I wanted to present to my white family about how they viewed people of color, how they viewed my father, how they viewed this relationship. And eventually I just settled on, I love my family. I'm not going to dig into this. Mm-hmm. But I would talk to other people and learn that it was frowned upon. It was illegal for interracial marriages in America. We would have been considered, a crime, even 20 years, prior to when we were born. So knowing that this was definitely something that was frowned upon, and I still hear it on occasion, mm-hmm. Which is surprising to me. But my parents getting together and having me, and, I feel blessed to be here. I always felt like it was a great pairing, even if it didn't work out.
Right.
And if there were some issues with the white side of my family, especially about how they may have viewed that, they've never let on about it.
Yeah. How about you, Chantel?
Yeah, I just in thinking about that, I felt like we weren't included in neighborhood things, or we were,
family wasn't included.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was true. It just felt that way. It was mm-hmm. like we didn't really do things with other people in our ward, or, and I also heard the Lamanite thing. I was like, whoa, I'm sitting in there and I'm looking at my skin and I'm just like, I don't know how to make sense of this. And
I'm a Lamanite.
But then they said the Lamanites were the good ones in the end. And I was like, well,
Of course they were.
But I guess I knew I was a good person. Right. So, and maybe it was like, it was complicated because I'm sitting here trying to unpack so many things right now in my head. There's just so much going, because I think I felt through my life that I wasn't worthy of certain blessings.
Oof.
Right?
That's a word that I really frown on.
Yeah, and it was just like, well, I don't deserve that, mm-hmm. and it was just this kind of subconscious thing. But then it was like, well, my mom's a good person. I'm a good person. And my dad was different than everyone else because he chose a Peruvian woman that wasn't really I didn't see it anywhere else. And so I don't know. But my dad was such a good person, right? Like probably the best man that I know. He is such a loving man. So nothing was wrong about it, because it was all just so much love, and then I felt loved by my parents. So, yeah, because I'm in it, because I'm living it, I'm not observing it from the outside. I'm just experiencing it. It's like, this is my truth.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and there's this is the thing. Like, there's always these challenges, right? And it's really an American thing. Outside of the United States, in some countries it's an issue, but in a lot of other countries it's not. And mm-hmm. so I did have this really interesting thing from the conversation we had before the show. And you were talking about some of the advantages, some of the people who've given some amazing contributions to art, music, society, politics. And there's a laundry list here of people that you came up with. And these are people who are biracial, right? I'm just gonna speed through this. We got Bob Marley, Prince, Drake, J. Cole, Sade, Alicia Keys, Jimi Hendrix, Charlie Patton, who's the father of the Delta Blues, one of my favorites since I grew up in the Mississippi Delta, Lenny Kravitz, Olivia Rodrigo, Slash.
Guns N' Roses.
I didn't even realize Slash from the Guns N' Roses was biracial. I had no idea.
Mama's black, yep.
Who we got? Bruno Mars, Frederick Douglass?
Frederick Douglass, yeah, man.
Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, Colin Kaepernick or Colin?
Colin right. Kaepernick.
It's Colin Powell, Colin Kaepernick. Malcolm X, Key and Peele, and of course, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And this list goes on and on. So I'm curious, why do you guys think that people from two different backgrounds who are biracial can be such contributors creatively or otherwise to society? Let's throw it to you, Ibe.
Well, when it comes to, I think the music and the creative
DJ
folks especially, I think when you come from, whether you were involved with both sides of the family and these different cultures, I think because you early on are probably pretty aware that you're not completely one of these things, it makes it a little easier earlier than most folks to start looking at yourself as an individual. And because of that, you might start exploring some of your individual interests that aren't necessarily a cultural thing. So, and with creatives, you know, you can do a lot of that by, you can sit in your room and practice guitar by yourself. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of this stuff on your own. And, you know, someone like Slash, I think if you're from the Black community, it's always been one of those like, oh, rock and especially heavier stuff. Right. Is that a part of the Black community? It is. There's, you know, the roots of rock and roll are from Black culture.
100%.
Yeah. And there's definitely, there's a history of punk rockers and, you know, just louder rockers that are Black folks, but it's not a known mainstream sort of thing. So you get some of these artists where they are just pursuing their personal passions, never mind the cultural side of it. Where I sometimes think when you are full Black or full white, there's always these questions about, well, what you're doing, is that Black? Is that white?
Got you.
And, but I think when you're biracial, there's already this assumption that you're weird, right?
You got this lane that's all to yourself.
Right.
So when Slash is playing his guitar or what, some other, you know, a mixed person is doing whatever, their own thing, well, yeah, they're one of the weird ones.
That makes sense to me now, because he collaborated with Michael Jackson, he collaborated with Lenny Kravitz, several Black artists, and I was like,
Lenny Kravitz, another, you know, biracial.
Yeah, I'm curious with you, Chantel. I mean, you're a creative. I mean, and, you know, obviously you hear these lists and there's a lot of different people from racial backgrounds. Do you think that does have a good impact on an artist or just, you know, a creative in general?
Yeah, like as you were talking, Ibe, I was thinking, I'm like, yeah, there's less expectation in some ways. I feel like that, it for me, kind of opened me up. I mean, I was in a bluegrass band for 5 years and I played the banjo and sang. Mm-hmm. And because I have on my dad's side of the family, I just came up with it myself. Like one day I was like, I'm gonna learn how to do this. But I found out that I have a grandpa's uncle that played the banjo, right? On my white side of the family. And it's like, oh, well maybe that's where that came from. But then like, I was just in a play, a musical, and I was dancing the salsa. And like, I've always had that in me. I have like—
It was so easy.
It was so easy. and but also just like, yeah, not having so much diversity in my home. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a big, huge rug of a llama on my wall, right? Wow. And from Peru, it's this beautiful thing. And then my dad taught us how to can and, you know, like plant in the garden. Like we just, culturally, there was a lot more diversity. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe that's expansive thinking, probably. And I just felt very free to explore who I was. And there was just less expectation of me because I wasn't Peruvian and I wasn't white. So I had to decide what I was gonna be. And it was like, well, I guess I'm a banjo playing salsa dancer that likes to make movies. And I would say too, with filmmaking, I just love diverse stories. And I think that makes me a unique filmmaker in the sense that like I'm always searching for stories that are different and that like I can relate to, even if I can't relate to it. Like I don't know what it's like to be Black. I have no idea. But I know that I don't know what it's like well enough to like work really hard to try and tell a story that is true in some way and do the work and consult with people and like open up myself to like bringing other voices in because I feel like I'm another voice. And so I think that's been a good thing for my career for sure.
And I think it's interesting that you're able to tackle those subjects, especially, you know, I think being biracial probably gives you that edge or that not only that edge, but that, you know, ability to do it because like I see a lot of the other LDS filmmakers here, like guys like T.C. Christensen. I love them to death. They're good guys, but they don't dare tackle some of those, you know, like with you tackling the some of those Black LDS films and kind of allowing the movie to take its shape based on your research and how you view those characters. So I think that's incredible. So there's it's an article by Psychology Today. It's by this author named Jennifer Latson. It's called The Biracial Advantage. And Duke University psychologist Sarah Gaither said, more people in this group say that being multiracial is an advantage rather than a disadvantage, 19% versus 4%. Gaither's research also found that those who identify as multiracial instead of just one race report higher self-esteem, greater well-being, and increased social engagement. So this is what I definitely want to get your thoughts on. I want to start with you, Ibe, on this. Now, what are your thoughts on that? With a little bit more of a engagement when it comes to having being biracial.
You know, I was actually a little surprised by the numbers because of my experience with the other biracial folks I know. While we certainly could enjoy being amongst ourselves, I think there was struggles constantly to feel a sense of, you know, self-confidence and the rest in these other spaces. So I was actually kind of surprised to hear that there were so many biracial folks that felt like, oh yeah, this is a huge, huge advantage.
Somebody could be generational as well, though.
Certainly, yeah. And times have changed a lot, you know. We grew up in like the 80s and 90s. And it was a different time.
It was a totally different time. They were you know, my kids are biracial, as you mentioned. And, you know, in school, I feel like they stand out in a positive way versus like the negative experience that you guys may have had. You know, all the white kids want to be cool. Like, they're all listening to hip hop. They're all doing this. And so if you've got that sort of built into your DNA culturally, I could see how today's society, even particularly even in Utah, that might be considered an advantage because you're not just like every other, you know, white LDS Mormon person out there or something.
And representation is important. You know, nowadays you do see a lot more biracial folks. We had a mixed president, you know. If you're a younger person now growing up and seeing the world right now, and we're so much more connected with the internet and all of that, so you see the world definitely in a different way. I've noticed just the change in like what stereotypes are allowed for the cultures.
Okay.
You know, when I was younger, I felt like, you know, black kids on skateboards. That was something. I had one of my best friends loved riding a skateboard, but it was frowned upon when you go to, yeah.
right.
And,
no, bro, we don't ride them.
And that's just, those things have changed. Those things have and I think for good reason.
Mm, sure.
You know, you no longer have to hide that you
like,
know,
skateboarding.
That you like skateboarding.
Well, my sister was telling me, I was talking to her the other day, because I was telling her we were doing the show, and I asked her what the advantage was to being biracial, and she said that she has the ability to maneuver between both races with comfort. She can feel comfortable walking into a space where there's black people and just being herself and talking, but she also can feel totally comfortable walking into a white space, really any other racial space, because of her biracial background. Do you feel like that kind of spilled out into your life as well, Chantel?
Yeah, and I feel like it's evolved over time for sure, right? Like we're talking about, it's the way I felt about myself and the color of my skin when I was a child. I mean, it was college that started shifting it for me when my friends were like, well, you're lucky you don't have to go to the tanning bed. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what is happening here? And that, just like the beginning of that, and then having so many friends that were from other countries and from different places, and just the collection of the beautiful colors of skin of all my friends, like, it started to evolve. But then as, like, doors are starting, like, the stories that I'm telling, they need to be told. Like, I have an important voice because I'm drawn to those stories. It's like in my soul. So I'm the one to tell them, right?
Yeah.
And I feel that kind of call, and I'm so grateful, right? Like, I love, there's been in the last 10, 15 years, the color of my skin, the background that I have, being raised by a Peruvian mother and a white father, like, that has kind of blended into my life in a really beautiful way that I'm like so, so grateful for. So I think it's this real, it's a shift for me, right? Like, it's the healing that's happened inside of me to learn how to love myself and see myself. Representation is huge, where I, like, even in Encanto, when I watched that, I was like, what would my life have been like had this been around when I was a kid, where I could see the Latin culture, like, rising,
celebrate,
but also the hard stuff. I was like, I'm not alone in this, you know?
Yeah.
And just, and being able to, like, walk into a room, I do feel like I can connect with anyone, honestly, because I don't know what their experience is like, but I just know that it's different, like mine, and like we're able to connect. So I feel like it's easy for me to make friends.
Our kind of motto in the show is that we all have these shared cultural experiences. You know, your father might be black, your mother may be from Peru, but you have such similar experiences. And, you know, there's also some downsides. And so in that same article, I'm going to read this quote here. Multiracials face the highest rate of exclusion of any group, which kind of goes back to what you were saying. They're never black enough, white enough, Asian enough, Latino enough. So
let's get into that.
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, I just want to say before we start delving into that, that, you know, you were talking about going to the Congo and sort of blending in and, you know, feeling like, see, that's one of the downsides, because I've been to, like, a lot of places I will go, I will all of a sudden look like those people. It's a weird thing. Like, I'll go to Puerto Rico and, you know, even though they're kind of on the African diaspora, they'll be like, oh, you're Puerto Rican. I'll be like, okay. I went to Morocco. The people were like, you look Moroccan with your beard. And I'm like, okay, I'll be Moroccan. There's all these different races that we kind of pass as at times. I'm sure eBay's gotten it. I'm sure that you've gotten it multiple times. And a lot of that comes from...
I'm Australian. Some people.
I can see that. Like New Zealand. But let's talk about the downsides of it. What do you think about that quote?
Well, I relate to that. You know, more often than not, there is a you're not black enough, you're not white enough, or this question about how authentic. Do you really like the music you listen to? Do you really like the things that you're doing? There is always this question about, you know, are you real? Who are you? Yeah. But while I do feel like I can go into any space and people are they let their guards down and they're very comfortable to have me in those spaces, I've grown up in those spaces, so I feel comfortable in them, I still always feel a bit like an outsider. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, someone starts talking about your hair or your complexion, or it's just a reminder that we see you different, you know. Mm. And growing up in Utah, most spaces I'm in, it is not uncommon for me to be, I could be at a concert with thousands of people and I might be one of, you know, three or four people of color in the whole space. And I go to, you know, with my musical background, I love all types of music. So I go to a range of, it's not strange to see me. I'll go to a country show. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, any type of music if I can connect to, but being in those spaces and when I'm with white folks, especially, there is this pushback, you know, you hear it often about, like, why do you always want to make it about race, right? Like, this sort of comes up in conversations. And what I like to remind the white folks in my life about is, like, think about being the only white person in a space. It's not an experience that you have. Yeah. And for those of us who are the only one or one of a few in these spaces, we have to think about navigating our days very differently. It's not that we want to constantly think about race. It's not that we always want to talk about it or make something race the central point of it. It's that it's always something we have to think about. Yeah. It's always there. And I think when you're biracial, while you can navigate these spaces, you know, a little easier, I think, than some other folks, there's still a sense that, you know, am I really supposed to be here? Am I really accepted here?
I find that to be the case in black spaces too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just keeping it real. Like, people, if I go to a black space, there'll always be, like, at least a mention at some point about my light skin. What do you mix with? You know, what do you know, you're not really one of us. I was working with these three black dudes at a car dealership back in the day, and one of them just stood up and just said, "What is wrong with this picture? Who doesn't fit in this picture right now?" And they all just looked at me, and I was like, "You got biracial kids? Do you say this to your kids at the dinner table?"
Wow.
But there was this. I get reminders too from the black side about not being black enough. And when we were talking in the intro with Drake and Kendrick Lamar, is there pushback really from our own people at times? Do you get pushback from Peruvian people about you not being enough, Chantel? And I'm curious about that.
Well, the only Peruvian person that is in my life is my mom, and I think she loves me. the thing that for me, because there's not a lot of half Peruvian, half white people. My grandmother did come over, and I knew her a little bit, but so I never had that community here, right? And so trying to find that side of me, I think I've gravitated just toward every other ethnicity out there. Right. Mm. So, like, I am, my last film was about a woman who was black, and I That was hard. It was a really hard experience because it was like, well, you're not black. How can you tell that story? And it's like, so can I only tell stories about half Peruvian, half white people? Because like, I don't see that anywhere, right? Like representation is just, it's hard to see it. I want to tell those stories. Like, who else is going to tell that story if I don't?
Right.
There's so many other stories. I've read lots of scripts of like stories about a white man. And I'm like, that story has been told so many times. I feel really inclined to tell the story of someone else's experience because I can relate to that in some way. Yeah. Because it's, even though it's not mine, I don't know if I've never felt like I shared my experience with anyone. And maybe if I was in a little bit more maybe if I grew up in California, right, it would have been a little bit different. But here it was just like so unique, like a Latin home in a white community was just like so different that I think for me, it's given me this draw to explore what life is like for everyone. And that's maybe why I started making documentaries and like telling stories, is because I was just so curious. It's like, what are other people's experiences like? And if we can share those stories with each other, then we can just like understand each other better, and we can all be together like and love each other better, because we're all different. Like even if we were all sitting here and we were all white, I'm sure we'd all have very different experiences. Right. Like nobody's gonna have the same experience. And having the color of your skin, it's so visual, right? Mm-hmm. So people ask like, what are you mixed with, right? Like that matters to them, but it's like, there's so much more to us than that. Except that also like adds, I think it adds something that's just like really cool, really beautiful, really deep, layered. And so to have like all of that mixed in, I don't know. It's a process of, like I've said before, like learning how to love it, right? And then we can all.
Just curious, and I know we've got to wrap up, I'm just curious, like, do you go through times, because I know you told me about when you were back in Philadelphia and felt like, was it Philadelphia that you lived?
Boston,
okay, where people thought you were Puerto Rican.
Oh yeah. So in my early 20s, I could not wait to get out of Utah, and ended up moving to Massachusetts. And the Dorchester, Roxbury area is some of the oldest sort of like black communities in America. Couldn't wait to be with my people, you know. And I remember the first time going there and feeling so out of like. Just full-on culture shock. I didn't have the experience of, oh, I feel like this is everybody looks like me. And most people there thought I was Puerto Rican. People would come up to me and talk about it all the time and speak Spanish to me, you know? And I thought for a long time, oh, I need to go to Puerto Rico then.
Maybe that's where I fit in.
Yeah. I haven't been yet. But trying to find a place where there's more people who... Yeah. You know, look like you. Right. Yeah.
It's hard. Well, I want to just bring up one thing before we get into the end here. And I had this experience once with a bunch of friends of mine who were on a date. My friend's from Argentina. We're on a date with a lot of white people. This is in Dallas, Texas. And after we go race go-karts and do all these fun activities, we go back to this person's house, and we're out here in sort of a suburb in Texas. And they're like, okay, we're all gonna hang out here because there's too many of us to go inside and take over their house. Well, let's hang out, turn on some music. What kind of music do you guys wanna listen to? And this girl, she was white, she enthusiastically just blurts out, and I'm not gonna say the word, she goes, N-word music, and she's so excited. And everybody just stops, their jaws drop, and they just all look at me like, what's he gonna do now? and she had just forgotten that I was in the space, right? Mm. Like I had blended in. And so I'm curious, when you're among, you know, predominantly in a white group, in a white space, and you hear derogatory things being said about another race because people have forgotten that you're there, or they've gotten so comfortable with you that they things start slipping. How do you handle that? Being biracial, and that you're like, yeah, I'm white and I'm that too, or whatever. Any thoughts that you want to share?
Yeah, I often get, and like people don't know, that they're like, oh, I forgot you were brown. are like, you seem white to me. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know. Like, here I am. But
like she's a spy. So, yeah. Everybody be quiet about what we're doing.
But I think I've found that I can be an advocate maybe a little easier because I have instant empathy and sympathy because it hurts. Like, right? Like, I feel it inside because it's me that they're talking about. No matter what they're talking about, I feel it. And so then, but then I know that I can say something because they obviously don't think that about me. And so I call people out, you know, because I'm just like, hey, like, you know, I am not going to let you say any more racist things tonight. I'm so sorry, but I'm just going to stop it right there. And then they're like, oh, what are you talking about? I'm like, I mean, look, here, this is what you're saying, and it.
You're like, I've got a list.
Yeah,
this, and then that's like 5 o'clock. You said this. eBay, real quick.
You know, I'm shocked by that story, but I think you know, like Chantel, sometimes taking the moment to talk to someone, it's a worthwhile thing. If it's somebody that I want to remain in my life, but mm-hmm. in a situation like yours that you're sharing, and where I definitely have had, you know, when you see me, I couldn't pass. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are always very aware of, you know, that there's a person of color in the room with me. And so if you say something racist around me, you are intending, or at least that's my assumption. Right. And, you know, I will most likely just cut you off. And there's certain, you know, you learn growing up, I think people of color just across the board, we learn some of the hidden rules, like the things to keep us safe, right? Like, here's the places where I can go. Here's where I can't go. Yeah. You know, if someone's dropping certain things, they're saying things in a certain way, maybe that's not a space that I'm going to be okay in, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Which makes your situation even more shocking, you know?
Yeah. When I first moved to Florida, I didn't have my car, so I walked to the closest place to grab something to eat in the neighborhood. And it was a restaurant. It was called Florida Crackers. And I walked in, and it was like the jukebox went, and I looked around. I just turned around and walked right back out.
So I wanted to add something here before we're going to wrap up here. But there are some benefits to society about being around multiracial people. It's in the same article that I was reading. So being around multiracial people can boost creativity and agile thinking for monoracials. Monoracial is a person who's like one race. This is according to a Hawaiian psychologist, Kristen Parker. Humans are compartmentalized by nature, and labeling others by social category is part of how we make sense of our interactions. She says that race is just one category, and humans historically relied on it to decide who's the in and the out group, right? So racially ambiguous faces, however, foil this essentialist approach, so that's a good thing. So she found that just being exposed to more diverse populations, it can actually help people's not only ability to get along with other people, but ability to like improve their self racial attitudes and their own self-worth. And she said to change it, it's not only about being in a diverse environment, but soaking up things that make a difference. Like, you have to actually formulate relationships with people from other racial groups. Now, I know this personally because my wife, she's from Hawaii. She lived in Oregon, grew up there, but then she moved out to Hawaii when she was 16. And she said it's so multiracial out there that it changed her entire impact of her perspective of how she viewed other people. So I think that that's a good thing to note for people who may be in one racial group, who are white or who are black or who are Hispanic. Whatever, that if you do expand your circle and you're around people of more than one race, then it does kind of help your outlook and minimize that, you know, feeling of being isolated. This is my group, and that's it. I'm not moving. I'm not dating anyone outside this group. I'm not going to be with anyone but whoever's in this group. So that's just something to keep in mind as we wrap up. But thank you guys so much for being on the show, man.
I would like to say also thank you for, like, there's a part of me that's like, am I biracial enough? Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
Like, even coming here, and it's like, I get to hang out with you guys with all the experiences that you've had. And it's just like, yeah, overcoming that feeling like we are trying to do that. Like, figure out what the other person is, who the other people are in our lives and how we're more similar than we are different. And so I've loved being here and being a part of this.
Do you have any last little words for us before we go?
You know, I agree with that. The last thing that you put up on the screen. Mm-hmm. I think that the most important thing a human can do is get out of your bubble, your comfort zone, and travel, meet other people from different cultures, and not just if you have the opportunity to really get to know someone who has a different background than you, who looks different than you. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best things you can do for yourself. And biracial folks, we have that experience from such a young age because so many people feel a little more comfortable letting us into those spaces, even if we're not fully accepted. So it gives us a bit more perspective. And I think the folks in my life who are close friends, they do like to talk about this sort of thing with me. And it's just a really beautiful thing to get out there and explore the world and build your empathy mm-hmm. for and create those human connections with folks that are from a different group.
Yep. I personally feel like being biracial was one of the best things that happened in my life, and I absolutely have, you know, love for everyone. So thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.